Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, I think of it as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man whom I've come to know and admire greatly for his service in a number of different capacities is our first guest. He is Jack David. He formerly was a Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Combating Weapons of Mass Destruction and Negotiations Policy. He also co-chaired the North Atlantic Treaty Organization's Senior Defense Group on Proliferation, and in a number of other capacities has got the creds to talk about the national security threat posed by the proliferation taking place in Iran as we speak, being condoned by the Obama administration and likely to flow from it elsewhere in the region and perhaps beyond. He is today a senior fellow and member of the Board of Trustees at the highly esteemed Hudson Institute. Jack David, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you for inviting me for this conversation. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Well, thank you. It's a particularly timely conversation, I think you would agree, because of what's happening at the moment. You have recently written a piece with the very apt and largely ignored point that you cannot reason with a regime like that running Iran at the moment. Develop that thought, if you would.
The impetus for most of American foreign policy since the end of the Second World War was to create a world in which disputes would be resolved, not by force, but by negotiations, a world in which freedom had a chance to survive, where democracy might thrive, where countries would treat one another as adversaries, but would resolve their differences and pursue their ambitions in a constrained way so that war and death didn't result. That's not the kind of world that some people in the world want to have. But we have been thankfully pursuing it and successfully pursuing it, largely because we've had the preeminent military in the world over these years, and that threat of force always stood behind our quiet diplomacy. But the world has changed, and the bad actors in the world have perceived that we have not only a different view of the world, but we also have a weakness in pursuing that view. And that is that we keep our eye on the world that we want, even after our experience shows that the people with whom we're negotiating about a sharp difference have no such ambition and have no compunctions about breaking any of the rules which we have hoped the world would be bound by going forward.
Jack David, you've put your finger very well on kind of the crux of the matter, that this requires us not simply to be hoping for some better world and trying to strive for it. It really requires what our next guest, Andy McCarthy, has called willful blindness to what is actually the policy and practice and programs of, in this case, most especially, the Iranian regime. And, you know, I was very pleased to have John Bolton, former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, with us at a conference that we had in South Carolina over the weekend, in Columbia, South Carolina. We called it the National Security Action Summit. And he was scathing in his criticism of this deal and the conduct of the administration in pursuing it. He actually described it as, quote, unprecedented surrender, unquote. You are a man with deep knowledge of this business of arms control and the negotiations that have been conducted by various administrations with various bad actors in this vein. And particularly, you have a lot of expertise with respect to what, you know, that results in when badly done towards, you know, a more proliferated world. Characterize, if you would, this deal as it's shaping up now. Do you agree that it constitutes unprecedented surrender?
My good friends John Bolton and Andy McCarthy, I think that wishful thinking is a good accompaniment to Andy McCarthy's willful blindness, and I think we have both. And John Bolton's views about this are right on the money. Let me give you some factoids about this Iranian deal. We started, quote, negotiating, unquote, this deal with the objective of having Iran agree to zero enrichment. We've changed that to allowing them to have 1,500 centrifuges, then 4,500 centrifuges, then 6,500 centrifuges, to perhaps even more than that.
Remind us why that matters so much. What is it about these centrifuges that makes them so problematic in any number?
The essential ingredient necessary to create a nuclear weapon is the material that would give rise to a chain reaction when properly configured. Centrifuges are used to create that material, uranium-235. And without getting into the details, uranium in nature has only a very tiny percentage of uranium-235 amongst all the different varieties of uranium that are in the ore. The centrifuges help refine it so that the U-235 is there to be used for purposes including making nuclear weapons.
This is the so-called enrichment process, and the more highly enriched, the more problematic it becomes. So your point is that we've conceded on this kind of critical element in a nuclear weapons program.
And we've also conceded on other things as well in these negotiations. We started the negotiations saying that we were going to have an insistence on there be immediate compliance with numerous concerns of the International Atomic Energy Agencies about the possible military use and dimensions of Iran's program. We said that we were going to do that before any agreement could be reached. Now it's been treated as an implementation issue to be resolved later, if at all. So Iran is in violation of not providing the answers that the inspections, the verification people, have insisted upon for the last 10 years.
Even before we get into the agreement that they're supposed to monitor. I mean, it boggles the mind. Let me ask you quickly, Jack David, the Hudson Institute, what do you make of the thrash that we're now witnessing as a result of 47 United States senators writing the Iranians, just putting them on notice as to the importance of Congress being part of the process whereby this deal is formalized as binding on the United States?
I think it's a complete, I think the thrash, as you put it, is a complete distraction and an unfortunate distraction for people who don't concentrate on the issues and spend as much time on the issues as you and I do. People whose lives are filled with other things and don't have the time to do that. The real issues are the ones that you and I were just talking about. I think that the Congress has a role. I don't see anything objectionable to the 47 senators expressing their view about the Obama administration creating an extremely dangerous world, an extremely dangerous situation for the United States and for its allies by proceeding in the Iranian negotiations in the manner that they have been.
When you see the administration not using this expression of concern by nearly a majority of the United States Senate as leverage, as Tom Cotton pointed out on a Sunday program yesterday, does it suggest to you as a skilled negotiator that they're not only missing an opportunity for leverage to get a better deal, but that they are actually playing into the Iranians' hands by castigating the people who are pointing out how our constitutional process works?
I think you're right, but I think we have to get back to the first point that I made in the first question that you asked me in this conversation. And the first point is that the negotiations with the Iranians are pointless because their perception of the world and their perception of themselves as a growing empire to reclaim their historical role as an imperial power in the Middle East is at odds with the result that we claimed at the beginning of these negotiations that we were hoping to achieve. There never was a chance of achieving those goals. The Iranians said at first that they would never give up their right to nuclear weapons program or nuclear. They said they never had a nuclear weapons. They'd never give up their right to nuclear enrichment and to pursue that. They would not even allow discussion of their missile program in the thing. So there was never any point to these negotiations in the first place. And for Congress to be excluded and the administration effort to go around the Congress, it's a horrible situation.
Jack David, we appreciate extraordinarily the work that you have done with our government and that you're doing today at the Hudson Institute and your insights at Real Clear World, among other places. Come back to us again very soon as this story continues to unfold. We are very much in need of your reason, shall we say, and why we can't reason with Iran. Next up, we'll talk with Eric Stackelbeck about another of these threats, the Islamic State. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we are joined by a great reporter, a great author, and a great friend, Eric Stackelbeck. He is the star, of course, of The Watchmen with Eric Stackelbeck at CBN News. He is the author of several terrific books, including The Terrorist Next Door, How the Government is Deceiving You About the Islamist Threat. Also, The Brotherhood, America's Next Great Enemy. And then, most recently, in fact, hot off the presses and ripping up the bestseller lists, is ISIS Exposed, Beheading Slavery and the Hellish Reality of Radical Islam. Eric Stackelbeck, welcome back and congratulations on this body of work, but most especially the new one about ISIS. Tell us a little bit about it.
Thanks for having me, my friend. It's always great to be on with you. I wrote this book at the end of the day, Frank, because I think a lot of times Americans look at what's going on with ISIS right now and events in the Middle East, and they say, hey, that's thousands of miles away. It doesn't affect me. So I wrote this book to show Americans that the barbarians are not just at the gates, they're inside the gates. Frank, I'll give you a great example. Just last month, the FBI director, James Comey, made a really stunning statement. He said that right now, in all 50 U.S. states, including Alaska and Hawaii, we have ongoing investigations into ISIS-related activity. So, Frank, that means basically in every state in the union right now, we have a network of ISIS supporters and sympathizers. That's according to our own FBI director. And by the way, over the weekend, our CIA director, John Brennan, said that ISIS is now in some 90 countries around the world. So this problem is growing.
Growing, metastasizing might be another word for it. And the trouble is that there are several attributes about this outfit that combining the spread of its, well, program and the willingness of people to swear allegiance to it is translating into really a unique and extraordinary peril in terms of control of territory, in terms of amassing of resources, and in terms of this vehement pursuit of the Sharia ideology. Our guest is Eric Stackelbeck. He is an extraordinary national resource on matters involving the global jihad, having written several very important books on the subject, and of course, contributing daily with his wonderful segments, The Watchmen, with Eric Stackelbeck on CBN News. You can find out more about him at ericstackelbeck.com. You can also check out his newest book, ISIS Exposed, Beheadings, Slavery, and the Hellish Reality of Radical Islam, which is our topic at the moment. Eric, tell us a little bit about the caliphate as these guys are pursuing it and where they're now finding people joining forces and seeking their same goal, which, as I understand it, is both the imposition of Sharia worldwide and the creation of this kind of global theocracy.
Yeah, Frank, a few things here, and you know this so well. The goal of every Islamist group, whether it's the Muslim Brotherhood, whether it's Al-Qaeda, ISIS, on and on, is the reestablishment of this caliphate, this Islamic superstate that, as you said, would impose Sharia law on one and all, whether we like it or not. So ISIS right now has done that in the Middle East, a mini caliphate, at least, Frank. They've declared a caliphate in Syria and Iraq. They cover some 35,000 square miles of territory right now. That's an area the size of Great Britain. But the key thing here is the caliphate is now expanding, Frank, in the Middle East, in North Africa. Satellites are popping up that are pledging allegiance to ISIS. We have in the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt, we have satellites in Libya, Algeria. And now just last week, Frank, we learned that Boko Haram, the vicious, vicious Nigerian jihadist group, has also pledged allegiance to ISIS. I think that's very significant that Boko Haram pledged allegiance, Frank, because number one, Nigeria, oil-rich, important state in Africa. And number two, does this mean Boko Haram may go global now, send some operatives overseas? Look, if you're pledging allegiance to ISIS, you're now part of the global jihadist movement.
And hammer that point, because I don't think it can be said often enough. You know, we've got this authorization for the use of military force, Eric, that the president has laid before the Congress, and it sort of – well, not sort of. It explicitly says this is the problem, and while we would both agree that it is a problem, what is, in your professional judgment, the likelihood that if we focus exclusively on them like we used to focus exclusively on Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda Corps, that this global jihad movement is just going to continue to metastasize and spread?
It is. Look, if we crush ISIS like we should, Frank, in Syria and Iraq, and just crush them like we crushed the German war machine, the Japanese war machine in World War II, it would absolutely have a demoralizing effect on the global jihadist movement. But there are many, many more players in the movement. You have the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda. And on the flip side, Iran, Hezbollah must be dealt with. At the end of the day, Frank, Iran, who we now see as our ally, apparently, in the fight against ISIS, Iran is the head of the snake of this whole movement and has been for 36 years. And the only reason Iran is fighting ISIS is because they both want the same thing. They both want to lead the caliphate and dominate the region. What we have is the Obama administration trying to make the situation on the ground match up with their diplomatic initiative. Iran, for the past 36 years, Frank, my gosh, they've basically copyrighted the term death to America. Hezbollah has killed more Americans than any terror group other than Al-Qaeda. So look, Iran continues to support Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Al-Qaeda in some instances, by the way. I can't say it any better, Frank, than the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said 2 weeks ago before Congress. He laid out the entire case in a compelling, convincing speech why Iran is the world's number one state sponsor of terrorism. Now the Obama administration wants to throw that out the window, Frank, and they want to empower Iran in the region. Basically, we are leaving a vacuum, and the Obama administration is very eager to see that vacuum filled by the Muslim Brotherhood and Iran.
Yeah, it kind of boggles the mind, Eric Stackelbeck, given what you have written and discussed on your program and otherwise communicated so powerfully, which is, no kidding, this global jihad is seriously at war with us, whether we think we're at war with them or not. Eric, let me just very quickly ask you about four examples of the kind of problem that you talked about in any number of places, namely the Muslim Brotherhood's influence operations. You have Huma Abedin, a woman closely associated with the Brotherhood, back in the news because she's purging Hillary Clinton's emails. You have Andre Carson, a man closely associated with the Muslim Brotherhood, representative from Indiana, put by Nancy Pelosi on the House Intelligence Committee. You have the president lauding the Islamic Society of Boston as a model for countering violent jihadism. And you have Grover Norquist, now under an ethics investigation by the NRA, who's been closely tied to the Brotherhood as well. How serious is this civilization jihad component of all of this effort that jihadists are making here at home?
Frank, crucial component of the jihadist movement and the global strategy of Islamist groups like the Muslim Brotherhood. Look, ISIS represents one leg of the global jihad, Frank, the violent jihad. We know they want to behead you. We know what ISIS wants. But the Muslim Brotherhood, to me, in many ways, is more effective because they lead the stealth jihad of this global jihad. Look, where it's suits and ties, it's fluent English, it's speaking in moderate, eloquent tones, at least in public, it's having entree to the White House, to the halls of power. That is the fox in the hen house strategy. And look, the four cases you outlined, Frank, I don't know which is more disturbing. From Huma to Carson, now having sensitive Homeland Security information, a guy who's been linked to Muslim Brotherhood groups. But the good news that you mentioned, actually, is this investigation into Grover Norquist, finally. And Frank, that's something you've been watching on the wall yourself about for years and years. And wow, thank God that that's going on. But that stealth jihad continues unabated. And for President Obama to identify the Islamic Society of North America as the ideal American Muslim outreach group, wow. I mean, these are dangerous, dangerous times.
They are indeed. And thank God you are the watchman on the wall. Eric Stackelbeck, congratulations again on your splendid new book, ISIS Exposed. Come back to us again very soon and keep up the tremendous work you do at CBN. God bless you. Next up, we will be speaking with Andy McCarthy. We'll get his take on the Iran deal. We'll also talk with him about some of this willful blindness and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Senator Tom Cotton made a very trenchant point on Sunday in response to the endless criticism Team Obama and its friends in Iran and elsewhere have been heaping on him and 46 other senators. They are accused of acting in an unprecedented and unconstitutional way in pointing out the obvious to the rabidly hostile Iranian mullahocracy. If President Obama fails to secure congressional approval of the nuclear deal he is desperately seeking, the U.S. will not be legally bound by it. Senator Cotton observed that the president should be using that warning as leverage to get a better agreement instead of encouraging Iran to expect more concessions by castigating its authors. Far from ensuring peace, the disastrous accord now being finalized all but guarantees a new and devastating war. Don't go there. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Frank Gaffney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. I'm very pleased to say, joined by the great Andrew McCarthy. It really makes my week to have a chance to visit with him, and I'm sure it does yours as well. He is, of course, the former federal prosecutor turned pundit extraordinaire, now a best-selling author several times over, including books like Willful Blindness, The Grand Jihad, and Faithless Execution, all extraordinarily important contributions to our understanding of the challenges of our time, which he shares with us each week. Andy, welcome. It's good to have you as always.
Frank, great to be with you.
Well, I've been talking in the course of the program about Iran, and I think maybe we ought to start there. First, there is this extraordinary report that the Director of National Intelligence, a man who you'll recall very well, thought the Muslim Brotherhood was a largely secular group a couple of years ago, now seems not to think that either Iran or Hezbollah constitute terrorist threats. What make you of this latest finding by Director Clapper?
Yeah, it really is a continuation of this administration's illusion, I guess, that if they close their eyes and wish for it hard enough, that that will make it so. They have evidently the intelligence community, not all of it, but that which is headed by the head of national intelligence, that's Clapper, has purged Iran and Hezbollah from its list of global terrorist threats. Interestingly, the Defense Department's intelligence agency continues to not only list but pound away at the fact that Iran and Hezbollah are not only terrorist threats, they're terrorists. So it looks like the intelligence community is at war with itself, which I guess is they're at least showing a little more aggression to each other than they are to our enemies, I'd say.
Well, and this is all the more interesting because, of course, as you know, Andy, the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, was, I think, effectively purged out of there because he was too hardline. So it's all the more, I guess, important that we're seeing some backbone still left in that organization. But again, you're a serious national security professional, and you've watched a lot of foolishness out of this administration. Obviously, this has a lot to do with trying to do a makeover on Iran in connection with the deal that they're now trying to strike.
Frank, I think the rationale for this, if there is one, I think sensibly there's no rationale for it, but the thinking goes as follows, that, you know, now the administration has decided that the main enemy in the region is ISIS, and they think that Iran is cooperating against ISIS, and that the way it's cooperating is by aiding and abetting many Shiite militias, which up until 5 minutes ago we were regarding as Shiite terrorist organizations. So now that they've decided that they like the idea that Iran is acting aggressively through these proxies against ISIS, those proxies are no longer, by them at least, considered terrorists. In the meantime, as the Defense Intelligence Agency points out, Hezbollah and the same Shiite network of terror cells is adamant that if the United States returns to the region, they will return to the jihad against the United States. So they haven't changed. What's changed is the mental gymnastics of the Obama administration, but the players are exactly the same. And I think for a long time, Obama's been trying to pull us into an idea that's very popular with Turkey and with at least some of the Europeans, that Hamas and Hezbollah are just resistance organizations. We should be viewing them as political organizations that are dedicated to resistance against Israel, which in their mind is perfectly legitimate, not terrorist organizations.
Yeah, and we've actually had the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, John Brennan, make a similar kind of representation that they're moderates within those groups that we can work with. And I guess, Andy, the thing that is so alarming about this is as you put it very well in your book, willful blindness that this requires of us to ignore not only present dangers, but those that are growing by the day, and unfortunately not just in the nuclear context. Andy, before we let you go, let me ask you about a couple of other things quickly. One of the things that you've been bird-dogging very closely, fortunately, at National Review Online and I think at PJ Media as well, is the unfolding drama of the Emailgate scandal, as it's been called, of Hillary Rodham Clinton. You were one of the people who most powerfully brought to all of our attention the ties between a woman who's been very close to her for a long time, Huma Abedin, to the Muslim Brotherhood. As I understand it, she is now one of those that Hillary Clinton has acknowledged is determining what emails should be purged rather than turned over to the federal government. Give us a sense of what this could mean in terms of a very sanitized version of what Hillary Clinton was doing as Secretary of State and communicating about during that time.
Yeah, well, I think, Frank, that both Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, who's also another longtime Clinton aide who's apparently involved in this purge process, are not the best sources of an objective decision about what information should be in the government files and what shouldn't. I think they're, Ms. Abedin obviously has the connections that we've outlined to the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamists. And Ms. Mills has been, at least by the account of one witness, involved in keeping documents away from the State Department's own, Mrs. Clinton's own, handpicked accountability review board after Benghazi. So they were actually obstructing their own investigation. So not the best sources. And I'd also point out that they're both, certainly Ms. Abedin, I think this has been confirmed by the Times, I think correct with Ms. Mills as well, they've both got email addresses on the Clinton system. So, their own communications ought to be looked at, much less having them decide what communications anybody gets to see.
Well, and again, raising the question of official conduct of business through that channel, which, as you say, has all kinds of problems with it, quite possibly including criminal. And Andy, just say a word about that point you made in your piece over the weekend about classified information being almost certainly involved here, whether it's classified documents per se or not. And I must tell you, I find it incredible that there aren't also classified documents. But just again, from the point of view of the policies of the State Department itself promulgated by Hillary Clinton, how does this square?
Yeah, it can't be squared, Frank. The Secretary of State and her top advisors operate at the highest level of U.S. foreign and national security policy. A good deal of what they work with is classified information. I would say over half of what they work with. And while it's been stressed, as I understand it, by Mrs. Clinton in her statements that, you know, she never had classified documents on her system, that may very well be right, because you have to go in the government to a separate system to access national security and national defense secrets. But you're also not allowed to talk about that information. And it would be very surprising to me if there were not allusions to the information that's in classified documents as opposed to the documents themselves.
All of which would have been a field day for bad guys who almost certainly were inside the wire on her emails. Andy, lastly, quickly, there is apparently a continuing commitment on the part of Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the Senate to bring Loretta Lynch's nomination to the floor for a vote to be the next Attorney General. And yet, he is insistent that nothing can take priority over a human trafficking piece of legislation. I'm sympathetic to the idea that that ought to be sanctioned, but I do wonder whether the continuing determination of the majority leader to confirm someone who has clearly indicated she supports the president's unconstitutional conduct on amnesty is kind of bizarre. What's up with that?
Yeah, I think that McConnell obviously should not be bringing this nomination to the floor. I mean, you have someone who's nominated to be the chief law enforcement officer of the United States who has said in her testimony that she supports the president's unilateral, unconstitutional amnesty and his non-enforcement of the immigration laws. To me, that should be the end of the matter. She doesn't get a vote.
It's a bad sign, indeed.
Yeah.
But at the very least, I would argue, with, as we talked about last week, Andy, that we ought to make sure that she allows and enables people who would be her subordinates, the U.S. attorneys, to go get those servers from Hillary Clinton.
Yes, at a minimum, because only the Justice Department can do that.
You've made that point very well in your wonderful writings. Andy McCarthy, they include, of course, your columns at National Review Online and PJ Media, as well as your extraordinarily important books, including most recently one that's all over the map at the moment, Faithless Execution. Keep up the great work, my friend. Come back to us again very soon, if you would. Next up, Congressman Robert Pettinger joins us. We'll talk about what all this might mean in terms of threats to us and what you can do about them. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We will never fully understand what we've asked of our military service members, of their families, or their children. Asking them to deploy, patrol, stay on watch, on point. Asking them to put themselves in harm's way, to endure it all. But we do understand that it's our turn, our duty, to bring them all the way home, to keep them secure, to have their backs for the rest of their lives. Wounded Warrior Project long-term support programs do whatever it takes to help our most severely ill or injured veterans live independently, at no cost, for life, so that they might stand at ease. Find out how you can help at findwwp.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress.
A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life. It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty, something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's not about paranoia
or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We
trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. Robert Pittenger represents the people of the 9th District of North Carolina in the United States House of Representatives. He is a member of the House Committee on Financial Services, which is a very important committee in a number of respects, particularly in terms of trying to counter terrorism financing. And importantly, he is the chairman of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, and a member of the Task Force on Terrorism and Proliferation Financing. So a perfect man to sort of help be the cleanup batter on a very important series of conversations we've had on Iran and on the Islamic State and on the administration's policies towards these outfits. Congressman Pittenger, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It is great to have you with us, sir.
Yes, sir. Best to you, and thank you for your good work.
Well, thank you. And it's really important, I think, to be having this conversation at a moment when we're seeing really so many things that almost strain credulity taking place. Could I get quickly your thoughts on the administration's approach to one of the most serious proliferation threats on the planet today, namely the Islamic Republic of Iran?
Well, I do believe it's been very misguided. You know, it's in contrast to how President Reagan and other leaders handled the Soviet Union back in the 80s. We have provided Iran repatriation of $12 billion in oil profits. It'll be that much by the end of June, $700 million a month, and which has sustained their economy. In contrast, what we did with the Soviet Union was put enormous pressure on them. Economic pressure, military pressure, foreign policy, and foreign individuals who are engaged with us. The Pope was involved, like Valenza, Margaret Thatcher. It was a very concerted effort to put pressure on the Soviet Union. And as a result of that, the Soviet Union collapsed without firing a shot. The president appears to be under the impression that if he apologizes and appeases and provides whatever our adversary wants, that they will be good people and they'll come to the table and do the right thing. There's really no basis for that. I mean, they've broken every single UN requirement and international atomic energy effort to reviewing them, and they have never come back with a report that they have kept the requirements that they're supposed to keep.
And I'm so glad you made this point, Congressman Pittenger, because it does really, I think, give us an alternative plan of action, both with respect to Iran and what I'd like to turn to next, namely the sort of wider global jihad threat that we're confronting, and namely President Reagan, who I had the privilege of serving, as you may know, put it in something he called National Security Decision Directive 75 to do exactly what you just described. And all elements of national power strategy directed at actually destroying the Soviet Union. And as you know so well, the financial piece of that was supremely important, an economic warfare component really to cut off the funding for this outfit. And as you so rightly point out, we're doing exactly the opposite today, which can only embolden these guys, I'm afraid. But talk, if you would, about the legislation that the Congress is supposed to be considering, at least if President Obama has his way, the so-called authorization for the use of military force. It really pales by comparison with that kind of National Security Decision Directive approach. But do you have any comfort that the president actually has a plan, and are you likely to support it? And what do you think your chamber will do?
Well, I'm glad that the president's come to the Congress. I think it's the right thing to do. However, I think what he's requested is not consistent with what the requirement is. He has announced to the world that he will limit this to 3 years. He has restrained and restricted what our military capacities will be. He's basically told our enemies, we're not going to do this, and we're only going to be there 3 years. So I guess he's under an assumption that after 3 years, they're going to give up.
Or that the Iranians will have taken over Iraq and they've cleaned it up. I don't know. But you're right. It does strain, as I say, the credulity, I think, of anybody who really understands what these guys are about.
I wouldn't concur that Iran's going to go into Iraq and clean it up. I think they're interested in their own domination, their own hegemony, their caliphate there. I mean, the enemy of our enemy is our enemy. And in this case, we should take no assurance and comfort that Iran has positioned themselves to be supporting the Iraqi government against ISIS.
I think that the administration seems to have thrown its lot in, as we've been talking about in the course of the program, with the Iranians, to the point where they're not only appeasing, as you say, and apologizing and otherwise trying to accommodate these guys, Congressman Pittenger of North Carolina, but they're also actually now whitewashing them to the point where the director of national intelligence is saying neither they nor their proxy, Hezbollah, constitute a threat. You're the chairman of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. What do you make of that? And what kind of response do you think Congress ought to muster in light of it?
I don't know of a more irresponsible statement than one could make. Iran is the primary sponsor of terrorism for over the last 30 years. Interest and provocation continues. You can see their footprint not just in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon and Yemen, but Northern Africa and Venezuela and Argentina, Cuba. They are expanding. And I don't know that we have a graver threat. Is much concern as I have regarding the interest objectives of ISIS, Iran is a far greater threat, particularly in their reality of them obtaining nuclear capacities and working with North Korea on ICBMs, long-range ballistic missiles. So that is an existential threat to the United States of America. And we shouldn't go blindly through this thinking that that they're going to be good guys and will be totally different than what they've been since 1979 and the overthrow of the Shah.
And you know what's so striking about this, Congressman, is that we're watching them behaving more and more badly as we seek to negotiate this deal. If that is any indication of how they'll behave once they have a nuclear weapon, once this deal is in place at the very least, I think it's augurs very, very poorly. Let me ask you about this specifically in regard to both your service on this Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and work you've been doing with an important organization in your own state, NOAA Foundation, on the possibility that an electromagnetic pulse attack could be mounted by the Iranians that would be devastating to our country, and some really important work you've done in terms of providing a terrorism preparedness manual for the American people to help them prepare better for these kinds of contingencies. Talk about those, all three, if you would, quickly, sir.
I think that we need to realize that we see it on TV every night, but the possibility of a chemical, biological, nuclear, type of threat is there. Pakistan has, a terrorist internal threat, very unstable. They have nuclear capacity. We've already talked about Iran. The interests of our adversaries, they become more engaged and more provocative. That's why we produce this manual. You can read it at preparenow.com. And it's just practical, common sense things that any family can do and small business can do to prepare themselves and to make provision in the event of some type of an attack. There's hundreds of people gone to fight in Syria who have passports, American or European. We have sleeper cells here in the United States. The director of the CIA, as well as the FBI, Senator Feinstein, they've all gone public on national TV to discuss the sleeper cells here in the U.S. Let's at least make some reasonable preparation.
And I hope among those will be trying to prepare our grid to make it less vulnerable to these sorts of attacks, either by sleeper cells or cyber warfare or EMP or just the sun. Congressman Robert Pittenger, I'm afraid we have run hard out of time before there's even a beginning to the end of the things we'd love to talk with you about. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. In the meantime, I so appreciate the work you're doing with the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare, which you chair. And, of course, this new Terrorism Preparedness Manual, folks, I hope you will check it out at preparenow.com. Congressman, we'll talk with you again very soon. We'll hopefully talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, thanks for listening. This is Frank Affney. Over and out.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.